intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Welcome, one and all, to another PC Invasion podcast. Bit of singing there for you. It won't continue, don't worry. I'm Peter Parrish. Hello, Tim McDonald is here as well. Hello.
Hello, I'm Tim McDonald. I will not be singing on this podcast. You're welcome.
Well, that's a bold claim. Who knows what the future may hold?
It is true, this is a podcast full of magic and mystery, and occasionally madness. So it is not improbable that we will wind up doing a musical episode at some point.
The musical numbers, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Although it
worked that Buffy
really,
episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, it worked really well for Buffy, so...
That's the one everyone remembers. This is where we're missing out. All right, I'll start thinking up some rhymes for FOV slider, and we'll be golden. Let's do this thing. Tim, why does Dota 2 want your phone number? Is Ice Frog gonna ring you up?
No, that would be nice if this was because Ice Frog wanted to personally phone up everyone, and say, "Hey guys, thanks for playing."
How long do you think that would take? You know when they do those statistics about like, oh, the distance to the moon is the same as a billion football fields laid end to end or whatever.
Distance to the moon in pennies, end to end.
Yeah. This is time measured in Ice Frog calling every single player of Dota 2.
It would probably take a while. That's maybe a bit of an understatement.
And also, it's difficult, I suppose, because you don't know how long each call is going to last. Like, does he set a time, or does he just talk until each person's bored?
It also depends on whether, like, he's willing to leave a message, or if someone's not in, if he'll ring them back,
right?
Or what. Yeah. There are a lot of variables we don't know.
I'm going to pass this over to the science team.
I also wonder if, you know, it's like everyone who has ever played Dota, like, would you get a phone call? Because you played it once.
Right, that's a good point. Yeah, I have.
Or is it I've only people it... in the past few months? Yeah.
Right. I think there has to be a sort of active player barrier in place. But what that would be defined as, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but, you know, none of these games like, you know, listing active players. They just list, oh, we've got 20 million accounts. It's like, yeah, 10 of them are still playing.
How many signed up for the beta and then never came back ever again? But anyway, what is the real reason that Dota 2 is asking for your phone number?
No, that is the real reason.
Oh, right, okay, good. I'm glad we've finished that.
No, it's one of those, it's fucking authentication stuff. It's so that you can't have, like, multiple Dota accounts playing ranked matches. If you want to play ranked matches, you have to have a phone number tied to your Steam account, basically. That's kind of shit for people like me who don't really use mobile phones. But then again, I also don't really play ranked. It's mostly just so that, you know, you can't get like a really high rank and then go, actually, I want to play some easy games. I'm going to go and crush some noobs and start up a new account and go and destroy people.
Could you do that if you had two phones, though?
Probably, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't seem like an insurmountable barrier. Exactly.
No.
Unless, I mean, do you have to have like a smartphone for this, or is any...
I don't know. It didn't specify. I would like assume so for the sake of verification code or whatever.
Oh, man, even I couldn't do this then. I've just got an old shitty flip phone.
Well, maybe they just send you a text or something.
I mean, yeah. Well, I've never really understood why I couldn't use a normal phone for the marketplace authentication thing, because presumably, yeah, it is just a text message. Mm. I can get a text message with a code in it. That's not that difficult. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So I'm not really a big fan of that, to be honest. I still don't have marketplace authentication.
No, I don't.
And now I'm apparently never playing Dota 2 ranked again.
I can do a weird card laundering system where I send them to my... No, I can't even send them to my wife, because that would have to take like another 2 weeks, wouldn't it? Or no, because yes. She'd be on my friends list, so that would be okay, right?
I think so.
Maybe. I think I can launder the cards to her, and then she can sell them using her smartphone. Whatever. It's a very convoluted process.
In any case, yeah, it's as noted, it's not exactly an insurmountable barrier, but
no.
It's the sort of thing where it'll likely stop a lot of people from just casually doing it.
It's a lot more of a barrier though if you need two smartphones. That's a lot more difficult than just buying some shitty burner mobile phone for no money. And...
Yeah, but on the other hand, it might just be you need an extra SIM card or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, fine. Anything else amazing in this patch update? It seemed like it was mostly ranked oriented.
Yeah, they're mostly fiddling with matchmaking and trying to make things less toxic by like having harsher punishments and actually paying attention to people using bots to inflate their rank and stuff like that.
Right. That's in theory a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, trying to make the Dota 2 community less toxic is a little bit like trying to bail out the Titanic with a teaspoon, but, you know, step in the right direction.
Yeah, now they've got two teaspoons. It's going twice as fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, fair enough.
There are
any efforts in that direction are always welcome.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that people suggest that would probably work better for this sort of thing, but... I don't know. I don't understand Valve, but I've made that very clear on numerous podcasts.
I'd refer you to specific episode numbers, but I can't really remember. Was it last week where we did?
I think last 2 weeks ago. It was either last week or 2 weeks ago. I had a massive rant about Valve.
The one where we were talking about them shafting Dota 2 artists. I think that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, probably. That doesn't sound like something that happened last week.
No.
Everyone's forgotten about this by now, obviously.
Yeah, well, presumably not the artists that are still going, guys.
But everyone else has gone, oh, hey, look, there's a new patch. There's like there's new shiny hats, guys. Look, it's amazing.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? You get into the news cycle a little bit and everyone goes, oh, no, that's bad. What can we do about this? Basically nothing. But I do feel bad about it.
Pretty much.
I mean, not sure what else you can do unless you can corral Dota 2 players into a mass protest, but that's kind of unlikely to happen, I would say.
I swear there was something else I was going to add about this, but I can't remember what it was. So
was it the regional thing?
Oh, no, I was just going to say that there have been like a lot of suggestions as to ways that Valve can deal with bits of toxicity, like implementing an Overwatch system where players... Like, if someone gets reported for intentional feeding or something, then people who sign up for this system, several of them can watch the replay and decide whether it is a valid complaint that should be upheld or not, and so on and so forth. Which, you know, because there are occasions where you will do things that people don't like, and you will still win the game and they will report you anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Because people are shit.
Of course, and they think, oh, you must have cheated in some way. Or maybe not even that.
It's not even cheating, it's just like, you pick techies, you're getting reported. That's a really good way to get into low priority very quickly, is to pick techies a few times.
Is that fair, though? Maybe that's just reasonable. I only know of techies via talking to you, so...
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's...
No, I know. That is shitty.
Yeah, a little bit. There's bits and pieces like that, or doing unorthodox builds on heroes, which the game totally supports. There are lots of weird and wonderful things you can do, many of which actually work. And yeah, people will see this and go, oh, you're ruining the game, you're playing it wrong, I'm reporting you. And This unfortunately does happen a bit. So yeah, some sort of like oversight committee, which is a thing that I believe they already do in Counter-Strike and I'm pretty certain that League of Legends has a similar system and various other bits and pieces. But for whatever reason, no, they've basically said, no, we've put a new algorithm in.
Now it's
probably
work.
Fixed now.
That'll definitely work. Can't see any problems with that. Right. Oh, that's Dota 2 covered.
Hooray.
That's all of Dota 2's news you could possibly want. Sort of breaking news, not necessarily because this has previously been pretty confirmed. Call of Duty is going back to World War 2.
And literally nobody cares.
Well, that's probably not true. I'm sure some people care. That's kind of the end of the information, really. They just put up a thing. They put up a website with a countdown on it, and they're going to reveal it in full. Probably not in full, but partially. And
at
live
E3?
Next week. Next week.
Oh, wow.
April 26th. So what is that? That's Wednesday, isn't it?
But that'll be like half a mission shown off at E3 at probably the Microsoft conference.
Oh, no,
might be the PlayStation one, though.
Yeah, they're Sony now, aren't they? Didn't they flip last time? I think
they did.
I think Sony had the Call of Duty stuff, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have like half a mission with a couple of interludes that say, we're skipping this bit, and then it'll cut ahead to more shooty bang action.
Yay.
And then they will announce that there'll be some sort of exclusive DLC for the play box.
Yeah, and there'll be like a season pass.
Isn't this game actually called Call of Duty World War 2?
Yes, it is.
That is really stupid.
I mean, it's straight to the point.
They've already had three Call of Duty games set in World War 2.
Yeah. It does. I mean, okay, I understand that there's definitely
actually four, isn't it? There's World at War.
I'm surprised it's only four, honestly. I was willing to go with it, but
well, Call of Duty's 1, 2, and 3, and like they had some I think they had some standalone expansions and stuff as well, if you really want to count them, but those three were definitely World War 2, and I think World at War might have been World War 2. I think that was World War 2.
That sounds
I think that was the Pacific campaign.
That sounds like it would be. I mean, World at War. It's not World War One, so it's probably World War Two.
Well, in fairness, like Modern Warfare 3 also had a world at war.
Okay.
That was a fictional war, though. As opposed to the highly realistic wars of the other Call of Duty games.
Sorry to break into this, but Tim's webcam is getting so bright, it looks like he's been consumed by some kind of angelic presence. It's like the more you talk about World War II, you're now like flashing back to some kind of 1940s timeline. Sorry.
I'm trying to angle my head so that I've got like a halo.
it's not working. No, it looks like you just have no head.
I'll try and
I don't really mind, but
I'll try and shut the curtains a little bit more.
Sorry, listeners. That wasn't actually necessary detail for the podcast, but it was amusing me.
I'm not sorry in the goddamn slightest.
Which sort of 1980s, 1990s celebrities do you think they'll have in the zombies mode for World War II?
I don't know. Have they had Michael Madsen yet?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. That'd be a good one.
They
Molly
have
Ringwald.
I'm pretty certain they have had Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Not sure. Probably. Maybe.
Are you asking me this despite the fact that you don't know any of them?
I remember Bill Paxton did it. He's
okay,
not coming back.
And then in like the other three games in which they've had zombie mode,
they had Jeff Goldblum, so probably
I don't
not him
that
again.
One actually, but that's quite good.
Yeah, he was in the one, not the last one, the one before the last one. Stunning Call of Duty knowledge on this podcast. Never let it be said otherwise.
Well, in fairness, this is still better than Paul, because Paul's infamous Call of Duty story is that he started playing, I think it was Black Ops 2, and got stuck in a cupboard on the first level.
That's right, yeah. Fewer cupboards, possibly, in World War 2. Not necessarily, though. He might be all right there.
I don't know. You'd think it'd be fewer cupboards in the future because they'd have like space cupboards where everything like they automatically slide out or something. So it's very difficult to actually get into them.
The World War II cupboards might have been requisitioned to be turned into wood to help the war effort. Though we've got a lot of mileage out of the announcement, which is basically just Call of Duty's doing World War II, which we kind of already knew.
I was literally saying those words right then. Yeah, I was going to say, despite the fact that A, we know nothing about this except the title and the setting, unless the title is just throwing us off completely, and it's actually a big twist. And
it's actually another futuristic one.
And two, none of us give a fuck about Call of Duty particularly.
Yeah, all right. Let's move on. Do you care more about Battlefront 2, Tim? There's more information about Battlefront 2, so this could be like a half-hour segment easily.
I do quickly want to say, you know, I don't care about Call of Duty, but I do kind of like Call of Duty sometimes. It's a weird one for me.
I have to acknowledge it as a very big thing in the world of games, just because I don't care about it personally.
When it's done well, it's an entertaining shooter. It's popcorn entertainment. You know,
we've transitioned back into talking about Call of Duty.
Shut up.
I'm just trying to
defend the thing. I'm trying to clarify when I said that we don't give a shit about it. That's not strictly true.
No, I know. It's lower on our list of priorities, but
it's not something I overly care about, but it is something I reasonably enjoy if it's done well.
I wanted to say I'm not sure about the tactic of going back to World War II in response to fatigue to the sort of futuristic settings that they've done for a long time, because the reason they went away from World War II is because everyone got sick of World War II.
Well, yeah, but now, everyone's not sick of World War II anymore. Unless they've played Sniper Elite.
But they might get sick of it more quickly this time.
Possibly.
It might set in fast. Anyway, Battlefront 2.
With the last Call of Duty, they did the whole remaster of the first game, didn't they?
Yes.
So we've already had a World War II one recently.
I suppose so. Yeah.
It's just one that we played before, and anyway, really bad.
Star Wars. It's
15 years old or something.
The Wars of the Stars. Battlefront 2. Just gonna keep saying that. They announced a list for Easter, which is a bit annoying. I'm not sure why they decided to
bastards.
Do that. I know, yeah. They had this whole event thing. I don't know if it was a special Star Wars event or if it was just at some comic convention or what, but
Was that like when they also released the trailer for the teaser trailer for the new movie?
It was possibly. I think it was slightly ahead of that, but it was part of that whole marketing bit, yes. I think it was the day after that came out. Anyway, Battlefront 2 is going to have a single player campaign, and it's been co-written by the guy who wrote Spec Ops The Line, which probably isn't going to be like Spec Ops The Line.
I don't think this is going to enter into that level of mindfuck.
No, but still, I was pleased he was getting more work.
Yeah, that's good, and let's face it, Rogue One did kind of deal with some of the more underhanded grey morality of the whole war thing, rather than Rebels good, Empire bad.
I haven't seen that yet, but...
Have you not?
Yes.
It's very good. Go and watch
from
it.
What I know of it, yes.
It is a very, very good film.
I think it's on my, Netflix DVD list somewhere. Might nudge it up. Not a huge amount of detail about the single player campaign except that. And you will be playing as an Imperial Special Forces lady who also is a TIE fighter pilot, or maybe just knows how to fly a TIE fighter because she's Special Forces.
And will defect to the Rebels halfway through the game?
Possibly. In the trailer, she's on a planet, one that's near the Death Star, because she sees the Death Star get blown up and is like, oh shit, this is bad news for the war effort.
Is it confirmed that this is the only character, or are they going to do like a multiple viewpoints thing with several other characters?
I think I have seen confirmed that this is the one playable character, and it's not a Battlefield 1 type situation.
I kind of hope that they actually stick with the like Empire side of things.
Well, they did that in TIE Fighter just fine.
Yeah. I mean, rather than doing the whole defecting to the rebels thing, and then it turns out you're a Jedi as well, inevitably.
yeah.
Like, if they managed to avoid that, I'd be fairly happy, because I mean, you can still get away with using rebel vehicles or what have you, especially if you're a special forces person who needs to do things. But that's
You can even have some fighting with the rebels if you're, you know, infiltrating them as an agent or something.
I am cautiously optimistic about this. Only because over the past few years last year anyway, there were actually some good single-player first-person shooter campaigns.
Yeah.
I mean, Battlefield 1's campaign wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. Or rather, it's 5 mini campaigns, I suppose I should say. Titanfall 2's campaign was fucking superb. Even with like multiplayer focused stuff like Titanfall 2, it's not impossible. I would like to believe that this will be a proper. This would be a good. They could just follow in Titanfall 2's footsteps, because that had a first game that had no single player. And then it had a sequel which ostensibly was focused on the multiplayer, but had a really good single-player campaign. And if they do that for Battlefront, I will be ecstatic.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is definitely multiplayer-focused. I just started with the single-player news, because that was kind of a major addition.
That was kind of the one thing everyone complained about Battlefront, was that there was no single-player. I do miss the Battlefields and Battlefront, I suppose, games having bots, though.
Yeah, I have not seen mention of that for Battlefront 2. I swear they did mention them for the first Battlefront, and then they just didn't happen. I don't know if that was just badly reported information that got proliferated. But
I used to like sort of starting up a game of Battlefield 1942, like with some bots or something, and just having a bit of fun running around shooting them, maybe drive a bat in a tank, or practice being crap at flying.
I mean,
Battlefront did have some single player modes, but they were more like mini games that vaguely taught you how things worked. And some of them were like the one where you got to stomp around in an AT-AT and blow the shit out of everything, but it was still pretty. It was basically a tutorial.
Just a
tutorial that scored you based on how well you did and gave you medals.
The multiplayer in this one will supposedly cover all eras of Star Wars. So, you know, original films,
prequel films. Peter did an air quotes when he said that, so we can...
I was just waving my hands.
Oh, okay, I thought that was an air quote.
Darth Maul.
Peter, when you say all eras, though, like, do you actually mean all eras? Like, are we getting some Old Republic stuff in there as well?
No.
What about I mean, all Legends stuff that isn't canon cinematic anymore? Are we getting Thrawn?
No.
Okay, so basically we're getting this shit where TIE Fighters magically have hyperdrives now and X-Wings don't appear to have shields. Got it.
Sure. Maybe. It depends which era you're playing in. I presume it'll just be different.
This is the one thing I'm vaguely annoyed about with the new Star Wars films, and the fact that all of the stuff that I knew before has now been relegated to Legends rather than the main canon. So I know way too much about, like, thanks to X-Wing and TIE Fighter and various other things, I know far too fucking much about how various bits work and who manufactured what and why and now a lot of that seems to be irrelevant, and it causes me some problems when I'm watching the new films. So I'm like, but that wouldn't really, you could, why would, oh.
Yeah, you're listening to the equivalent of Star Wars classic rock, but
yeah,
the new contemporary stuff is different.
Yeah. I mean, I still enjoy it. It just causes a bit of really odd cognitive dissonance where I'm like, no, why? You've stolen a TIE fighter. Obviously, you're going to Jakku because, you know, why are you saying, why does everyone want to go back to Jakku? You can't fucking go anywhere else. They don't have a hyperdrive. That is literally the only place you can go.
Oh, well. Other news relating to this is that one of the DICE developers at the presentation said, we're not doing a season pass. And then later on, EA and Disney were like, whoa, hey there. Hold on just a second. So that's kind of up in the air. I don't know. Originally, they were saying, look, we don't think a season pass thing works very well for this type of game. We want to do something different. I don't know.
I'd largely agree with that to some extent. Like, season passes do tend to fracture the player base a bit.
It depends how you do them, but yeah.
Yeah, it does. This might be a case of it won't be a season pass in a traditional sense, or maybe it's all he was meaning is that DICE isn't doing the season pass, and they're giving it to Cyanide because Cyanide miraculously get all the fucking licenses.
The Star Wars one has just fallen in their lap now. Yeah. Yeah, it looks like the multiplayer has a lot more unlockable things and a lot more like skins and stuff. So I'm kind of wondering if their money harvesting might be going in this direction. Because, I mean, that's a good source of revenue, isn't it? Do all your rare skin character stuff for the Star Wars nuts.
Yeah, I could conceivably see myself, like, if I got into the game, I could conceivably see myself, like, buying a Dark Trooper. Oh, wait, no, the Dark Troopers now count as legends. They're not canon anymore.
No, but that's okay, because it'll do all eras to him, so they'll be in there somewhere, maybe.
No, they won't. They're legends. They're not part of canon anymore.
Oh, okay. But,
yeah. Yeah, I know. I just had, like, that is the one thing that would be really upsetting, isn't it? Is, like, if they came out and said, guys, guess what? TIE Fighter 2 coming to PC. Developed by Cyanide.
Oh, yeah.
I know we harp on Cyanide a lot, but let's face it, they kind of deserve it. I wouldn't mind so much if it weren't for the fact that they keep getting really good licenses with really good ideas and then not really executing them particularly well. If they were just making like average games like with their own IPs or something like that, then fair enough. It'd probably be a relatively decent mid-tier studio, find a few things to like in there. But when they're dealing with stuff like Warhammer and it just gets a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're Styx games. They're all right. They're okay. They're all right stealth games. No problem with those. But yeah, if they were to get the license to Thief, I'm going to throw a fit.
Well, that would still probably be better than the last Thief game we got.
It would. The first Styx came out in the same year as that game, I think, or very close to it, and was definitely a better game than the fourth Thief game.
So. Let's just agree that there are only three Thief games. There is only one.
Some people
Matrix.
Are so hardcore they only like two, and they don't even recognize the third one. But.
I like the third one. I can see why
it
people have
flaws.
A lot of problems with it, but I like the third one.
It was in a bad era when PC was not getting its due, and stuff like the limitations of the early consoles were only making you chop up levels into little portions and
I don't think it was that offensive for most of Thief, Deadly Shadows. If only you were generally going through the levels fairly slowly, so even if the segments were small, it would still take you a while to get through them. And like the first level, I think, was split into two segments. It was like the east wing of the mansion and the west wing, or something like that.
They usually tried to do it in a way that made some kind of sense.
And I mean, Thief isn't really a... it's a game with a lot of slow progression. There's a lot of stuff to explore and look around. So it didn't bother me too much in that. But yeah, that was also around the time that Deus Ex Invisible War came out, and that did suffer a lot more from these problems.
Yeah.
It also suffered from a lot of other problems, but let's not get into that.
That's most of Battlefront 2's news, to be honest, at least that I've looked at.
It has a single player, and we've managed to talk about that for what looks like 15 minutes.
Yay. It's got a multiplayer too.
With hats, probably.
Lots of unlocks. It's class-based, the multiplayer. I know that much as well. I don't know. They haven't said a whole lot else. Oh, it's coming out in November. There you go. That's a big surprise.
Can't actually remember if Battlefront was class-based or not. Like, I know the Battlefield games generally are, but I can't remember if the first Battlefront was. I don't think it was. I think you just picked your loadout.
I believe that was the case, yes. I think that's why it's notable that this one is class-based. I think they're making it more Battlefield-y by what I've read about it.
I would like that, but there's a delicate balance, because Battlefront has always struck me as kind of the more arcadey one.
I hope they didn't look at Battlefront not doing as well as they hoped and thought, oh shit, it's because we did it a bit different. Make it like every other shooter.
It needs to have much bigger maps, and you need to die in one hit from all the sniper rifles, and if someone shoots at you twice, you die instantly.
Absolutely. It's not a dice shooter unless that's happening.
Whereas I kind of like the... encroaching waves of stormtroopers laying down blaster fire and so on, backed up by AT-ATs just obliterating everything. And I kind of like that stuff rather than it being the more the very quick time to death that a lot of games have these days, especially in multiplayer.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So the thing we talked about last week. Namco Bandai's Prepare to Dine thing. Which I was pretty sure was not related to From Software, was indeed not related to From Software. It's a action RPG in the Soulsy sense, not in the Diablo sense, made by the God Eater development team.
Okay.
And it also has not been announced for the PC yet. Only for PS4, Xbox.
When you say yet, have they hinted at it or said like other platforms to be confirmed or something?
No, but
or is this just one of those cases where it would be a little bit odd if it didn't work?
I just get the feeling like this surely is, and also in the I think in the like HTML tags for their teaser trailer, it had PC listed as a platform. That might just be a placeholder from their usual tags or whatever. It's not confirmation at all. I guess I just, because they brought over the God Eater games to PC very recently, this is the same dev team. It looks like a game that would fit into the kind of current air of... we generally get this sort of thing on PC, that's really the only reason I'm thinking that, but it does seem a little bit strange. And it's not coming out till 2018, so there's still plenty of time for them to go, oh yeah, actually, doing a PC one too.
They've got a while on that. Sorry, I've been trying to think of a pun. I'm sure there must be one somewhere.
For what?
For Dark Souls and food.
It was Prepared to Dine. That was the pun.
No, that's what I mean. Like, so casually, the game itself could be referred to as I don't know. That's the problem. There's got to be like a word that rhymes with dark or souls that is food related.
Well, this might help. I don't think I've said the actual name of the game yet. It's called Code Vein. Vein as in blood veins, not preening yourself in front of a mirror.
That doesn't help.
All right. It does sound
I'm just trying to think of a food or cutlery or something that can fit into Dark Souls.
I mean, other than Namco just trying to get a bit of extra publicity off the back of, ooh, is this a FromSoft thing? It does actually sound slightly Soulsy, this game. Some of the terminology with like the main vampire characters, if they don't feed for a while, they become lost, which kind of had some synonymous overlap with going hollow and stuff like this. Maybe I'm reaching, I don't know, but some of the stuff.
It's less Dark Souls and more red blood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Red blood. Code red blood. But yeah, I guess there's not much point talking about this at the moment because it's not coming to the PC.
Not really. I will stop paying attention to this until it comes out, and suddenly I see like one trailer and it looks really good, and I wind up picking it up on the PlayStation or something.
Yep. While we're in the area of Japanese games on the PC, Nier is getting some DLC.
I wouldn't normally mention this, but worthwhile DLC?
I don't really know.
I haven't
played the base game. It's got some like arenas in it, and there's a new boss, and the main character can like walk around in lingerie now. So I guess that's a bonus if you're into that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did look up a little bit about this DLC, and I may have missed stuff, but it looks like the characters have they have costumes of characters from the original Nier.
Right, okay.
Which is where the lingerie thing comes from. That is presumably Kane's outfit from the first game.
Okay. Take your word for that.
And
otherwise,
yeah,
it looks kind of like arena combat stuff. But
I didn't see too much about that. The one other thing that caught my attention was that there are like two extra fourth wall breaking bosses, which are I think they are the CEOs of Square Enix and Platinum Games, and they attack by like firing their heads at you.
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good boss fight.
Yeah.
No complaints there. A good concept for a boss fight anyway. Who knows how it works in practice.
This doesn't feel like something Yoko Taro would come up with, though.
Well, you not think?
It's not quite his level of insanity.
Right. Well, but maybe there's some secrets to these boss fights. Maybe there's some hidden depths of madness to these things. Well, that's the news. That is the conclusion of the news portion. I have no more news. The news is gone and done. I've been playing Dawn of War 3. I can talk about it more now.
Can you convince me that this is worth a purchase?
Probably. You liked the other Dawn of War games, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Primarily for single player stuff, occasionally doing some skirmishes against the AI and doing some co-op against the AI, stuff like that. Like taking on hordes of AI enemies on the hardest difficulty with a very small number of friends and trying to survive as long as we could.
Was that the like last stand thing from Dawn of War 2? Or
I actually never played that. I was just thinking of Dawn of just War regular. 1, where we would set it up. We'd have like three of us join a server, and then we'd put like five AI players in on the hardest difficulty on one team against us.
Right, yeah, you can't do that in this. I mean, well, you can have like two people against three AI. The AI maxes out at three, so.
Oh, okay.
I guess you could do two against three. I actually don't know.
Is that because it's super intelligent and the game just can't cope with all the calculations?
No, it's because you can either do 1v1, 2v2, or 3v3, and that's your lot. Let's talk about the single player a bit, actually, because that's a lot of the stuff I couldn't talk about last week.
Sure.
It's not exceptional. I wouldn't buy it just for the single player campaign. It reminds me a little bit of the way the Company of Heroes 2 campaign acted as a kind of lengthy tutorial. Go on.
When you say you wouldn't buy it for the campaign, are you talking as an RTS person or as a Warhammer person? Because like as a 40K fan, even if the campaign is just kind of okay, I would probably thoroughly enjoy watching orcs get chainsawed in half and so
yeah,
on.
No. Better, very much better on the 40K side than the it's doing amazingly clever RTS missions side. I mean, the plot's not outstanding, but it's a very good excuse for orcs, Eldar, and Space Marines to all be in the same place at the same time and to be fighting each other. So, you know. Basically, there is an Eldar prophecy that says, you know,
of course,
inscrutable Eldar prophecy that says a planet is going to pop out of the warp, and the planet has the Spear of Cain on it. And the Eldar are well up for getting the Spear of Cain. Forgetting, of course, that big planets coming out of warp mysteriously is usually a bad omen. But,
yeah.
You know, there's a bit of disagreement among the Eldar. The main Eldar faction person who you control, Farsia Maka, who I think was in the first Dawn of War.
Do you play the campaign as the Eldar then? Or
you play the campaign as everybody. It alternates between Eldar, Orc, and Space Marines. Anyway, Farsia Mac is like not really fully on board with this prophecy and is like, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. So quite often she's fighting against the Eldar internally as well as the Orcs and the Space Marines. Yeah, it alternates missions. I think the first mission is Space Marines, then you play the Orcs, then you're the Eldar. It doesn't always go in that sequence, but basically it ends up that you play about five or six missions with each of them.
That's a relatively lengthy campaign, then.
Yeah, it's. I mean, depending how quickly you knock off the missions, and some of them are longer or shorter than others, but it's a good 15 hours. It took me about 16 or 17, because it's 17 missions, and they took about an hour each. So if you're quicker, you'll do it faster, you know, but yeah, it's pretty substantial. It just kind of switches around, basically. The main guy in charge of the orcs is called Gorguts. I think he's also a returning character. He's also heard that this planet has a powerful item on it, so he's well up for launching a WAG to try and get it. And the Space Marines just kind of happen to be there because they've been called in to help a nearby outpost who are like, oh, fucking hell, there's a whole lot of orcs here. What's going on? So they get roped into things as well. And also the Inquisition are like, oh, something weird's going on over here. We should probably
heresy.
Take a look at this. Exactly. Much heresy is afoot. So, you know, the usual Warhammer 40k excuses for things happening. Yeah. The Eldar are scheming and having inscrutable prophecies. The Orcs want to smash shit up. And the Space Marines are, yeah, wanting to purge the Xenos and stop heresy. And not fully that, because the Blood Ravens faction are a bit more honorable and a bit less zealous and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, they're doing things for their own reasons occasionally, but so the missions kind of alternate between sometimes you just have your commander type characters, the so-called elites is what they're called in this. You have them and like a small squad, and you're supposed to do something. Other times, yeah, you know, you have an objective, and that's
times
all you
have a base, and you have to do something.
That's right. Yes, Tim, you figured out relics, cunning structure. And that turns into like basically like a slightly more interesting scripted AI skirmish with some narrative bits. And at least for the first half, it's quite like an extended tutorial. It'll be like, oh, so here's your first orc mission. orcs upgrade their units by looting scrap and building warg towers. So you're going to be doing that quite a lot in this, and you know that's fine. It
slowly introduces new units and.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
The typical RTS campaign in that respect.
Pretty much. And as you're going along, you're also gaining skulls, and skulls allow you to unlock other elites to use both in multiplayer and in the single-player campaign if you want. It always
just
gives you...
Just
like in real life.
I need to collect 3 more skulls, and...
Who can you unlock?
I can get Winston Churchill.
Great. Good stuff.
I was going to go for Rommel, but I need like another 120 for him.
He needs lots of skulls to put on the SS uniforms, obviously.
Exactly.
And the campaign always gives you a set of elites who will be there for narrative purposes. But if you're like, I quite fancy taking a squad of assault terminators on this mission rather than this character you've given me.
Why would you ever not want to take a squad of assault terminators?
well, exactly.
Like,
maybe
Space Hulk aside, terminators are fucking badass. And the only reason they're not that badass in Space Hulk is because... Well, okay, for one thing, they are badass, but for another thing, gene stealers are capable of, like, peeling through doors that are 15 foot of steel with their claws.
I can think of 2 possible reasons. One is they cost a little bit more to bring into the fight in terms of this new resource you have for summoning your elites. So you have to wait a little bit longer until they can show up. And the other thing is you might want to... choose the Imperial Knight instead, who has some fucking massive Gatling cannons and shreds everything in about 2 seconds, even more efficiently than Terminators do.
Want Imperial Guards DLC, and I want Cypher's Kane, Hero of the Imperium, to be one of their characters.
Imperial Guard DLC would be pretty good.
Honestly, I mostly just want Cypher's Kane. Or however the hell his name is pronounced, because I haven't read that many 40k books, but those ones are brilliant.
Well, put in your petition to Relic.
Have you read any of those?
No, I know the name, but I...
he's an abject coward who keeps winding up in terrible situations, and through his cowardice, coming out on top. Despite the fact that he's an Imperial Commissar, and so everyone's like, wow, you're really good, you're an amazing hero, and so he gets sent into even worse situations.
So what would his like ability be in Dawn of War 3? Would it just be a random effect button that may produce something incredible, or may just make him retreat?
He's almost like a slightly less cynical Blackadder, who somehow winds up on top in the 40k universe.
Yeah, that might be a bit difficult to translate to this game, but...
Probably, but fuck it.
It's doable.
If he was in there, even if he was useless, and he wouldn't be useless, he is... he is a commissar for a reason.
He could just have a sort of generic, this guy has incredible good fortune buff that translates to the nearby troops and stuff.
Ridiculously massive health pool because bullets keep missing.
Yeah, exactly. That could work. There is a post credits tease for what the next expansion almost certainly will be, and it is the undead one. There you go.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to say we probably shouldn't spoil that on the podcast, but and I'll ask you about that. Fucking Necrons, really?
I would have been more reticent about it, except that people have already found a bunch of Necron stuff in the files for the game, and so rumors were flying that they were secretly in as a fourth faction, which is not the case.
And now you've confirmed it.
But
not that they're in as a fourth faction, but...
Yeah, but they're not in the game, other than as a very small cutscene. That'll be coming.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
On the one hand, okay, it would be
at least it's not the Tau.
Well, yeah, obviously. But on the one hand, it would be a little bit generic and repeating the past if we got Chaos again as the fourth faction, and then we got Tyranids after that. But
on the other hand, Chaos is kind of a big deal in Warhammer 40k. So
especially when you're dealing with planets coming out of the warp.
You might be able to put two and two together about where some of the plot goes there.
Yeah, probably. Chaos and the Tyranids are also, like, those are, we've gone over this before when talking about Warhammer, but those are my factions, as it were. You've got the Space Marines and the Imperial Guard and the Eldar and the Orcs and the Tyranids and Chaos, and then everyone else is fluff.
They're your core factions. It's like if you do a football game, then you have Manchester United and Juventus and Bayern Munich. You don't go like, oh, should we put in Burnley ahead of all of these?
Let's take out Bayern Munich and Juventus. We'll keep Man U.
Yeah, we're gonna add Scunthorpe. we reckon that's a good idea. This is gonna be good. Yeah, I don't know.
I like the idea of the Necrons, but I don't like the Necrons.
The thing that this leads into other things about the what is actually currently in the game that isn't even out yet.
I'm going to ask you a very tangential question shortly. But
good, I'm a big fan of how they've done the faction diversity in this, and that gives me hope for further expansions as well. I like how the Orcs and the Eldar play very differently from the Space Marines. The Eldar have a whole like teleportation system going on.
Yeah, I think you mentioned last week that you can like teleport your entire base across the map.
You can move every base structure basically anywhere within your territory. Basically, I'm not totally sure what the precise parameters of that are. And yeah, you also want to have a webway portal backing up your troops most of the time, because that gives them a nice boost to shields, and they can also retreat back into those and like teleport back to their base on a moment's notice if you need to. So that's all pretty cool. The Orcs build stuff from scrap, and they have these warg towers that basically play little rock and roll riffs to hype up the boys, which is fantastic.
Nice.
Space Marines are Space Marines. Yeah. they've got some drop pods that you can like bring people into the middle of a fight if you want. That's quite nice and very useful, but not super exciting. So even though you have unit types that are kind of synonymous with one another, like everyone has the basic infantry type to start, everyone has the melee one, everyone has a light vehicle, a heavy vehicle, etc., etc., they do still work and function a little bit differently within the faction setup, which is good. It works well. I talked about the multiplayer quite a bit last week.
You did, mostly in the sense of everyone was very confused because no one quite knew how it worked.
But, it's definitely, to repeat and to sort of say what my review does really, it's definitely more...
Sorry, I do that whenever I'm talking about games, Peter.
It's more RTS than it is MOBA, that's for sure. It's a lot more controlling multiple different troop types, building a base, having a long-term strategy for that base, and kind of specking up through your different troop types, micromanaging those troops in combat.
The micromanagement is the one thing that mildly worries me, but because that's always been kind of a pain in the ass in these games.
The micro is pretty difficult in this game because it's a lot quicker in terms of the lethality of combat. I find your troops can get fucked up very quickly, even in somewhat even fights.
Sure.
You've got to be on the ball for your microing, and it's not always that easy to pick out the troop types that you want to Like, if you're in the middle of a big firefight and there's all kinds of particle effects going off everywhere and you're busy going like, right, I want to select this unit of Howling Banshees so they can use their charge attack and go, oh, fuck, everyone's dead. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's partly down to skill, but there is definitely an element of, like, man, the information being presented to me through the interface is not helping with this a great deal. That's less of a problem. Like, it's completely fine in the earlier, smaller fights when it's just, I don't know, two or three units going up against each other. You can absolutely select who you want and use their unique abilities to your advantage there. But when it all starts kicking off and there's a couple of elites in there as well also doing their fancy spinning, shooting, leaping, crushing attacks all over the place, it's like, oh. It
gets a bit messy.
It gets a bit messy, yeah, yeah. Maybe that's a case of having to get used to parsing the different bits of information. I mean, that's certainly going to be a case to some extent. But
I have to say, this is more about like the brutality of things than the gameplay. But the intro to Dawn of War 2 is still one of my favourite intros to, I don't know if I'd say any game, but to an RTS game, certainly. I remember it being
very remind cool. me. I don't think I've seen that in a. I never played Dawn of War 2. I played the first one.
It's got Space Marines fighting Eldar in
right.
very cinematic fashion, and it's really pretty and quite well done, and shows the off the things that are there. It shows
opening
off
cinematic
the
for
quite well. I'll find it for you on YouTube.
Opening cinematic for 3 is pretty good as well. It's pretty,
I was gonna ask you a very tangential question. What was your first experience with 40K? Like how? What?
Oh,
I was thinking. I realized mine was a little bit unusual back when we were discussing Terminators, but I'm just curious what yours was.
I have two older brothers. They're still with us. They had some 40K stuff, basically. And I was like, oh, this looks interesting.
This is going to be like, this podcast is going to be entered into police evidence when they both have suspicious accidents over the weekend, isn't it?
And suddenly I get ownership of all their 40K miniatures, which they no longer own.
I have two brothers, yes.
Oh, God. No, I went past tense because, like, yeah, it happened in the past that I.
Yes.
I think they were just using the 40K miniatures to do a representation of the pen and paper game Traveller. But anyway, that was. And so they also bought the odd copy of White Dwarf here and there as well, which I would look at and go, oh, that's cool. This looks loads better than the slightly more boring child toys range that I'm normally used to.
A bit more interesting than Monopoly as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm well into these weird orc creatures and stuff like that. Well, because also I, either at the same time or before, I like read The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and stuff, so I was already primed for any Games Workshop stuff, to be honest. So yeah, that was pretty much it for me.
With me.
And then I found out that they did Warhammer Fantasy rather than 40K, and I got more into that, but did end up playing 40K a little bit.
I was always more into 40K than Warhammer Fantasy, but for me, it was kind of weird because I played multiple 40K games without knowing what 40K was, and it was only later all of this came into focus. Because I think I played Space Crusade on the Atari ST, which was actually pretty good.
I played that on the Spectrum, and even that was actually pretty good, the Spectrum port.
I mean, it's like I didn't know who Space Marines were or Gene Stealers or what a Dreadnought was or any of this stuff, but you know, I enjoyed it. And then a few years later I played Space Hulk on the PC. And you know, that scared me quite a lot because I was probably about 7 or something, and Gene Stealers running up and tearing off your Terminator's faces was actually pretty creepy. Again, I didn't correlate this with anything else. And then it was only a few years after that I discovered sort of Warhammer 40,000 as a whole. And that was when it all sort of clicked. It's like, oh, okay, space crusade,
all of these
space
things,
now I get it. Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was kind of how I got into all of it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also just probably because I was already getting interested in it, I would gravitate towards people who like owned Hero Quest or Space Crusade or something like that. And
Hero Quest was fun.
I did
also play Hero Quest. I know that was Games Workshop, but that wasn't actually Warhammer affiliated, was it?
Sort of yes and no. I mean, it uses a lot of the same kind of it has a Bloodthirster in it. But it doesn't go into like, oh, because he worships corn and all of this stuff.
And then there
it's kind of a.
I think my big experience with fantasy, Warhammer Fantasy, rather than Fantasy Warhammer. Although let's face it, Fantasy Warhammer is pretty much what we all called Warhammer Fantasy to differentiate it from 40K before they changed the name to that.
Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
I did play quite a lot of Warhammer Quest as well because that was a nice kind of a simple hybrid between a pen and paper RPG and a board game.
Or did that spin off from Advanced Hero Quest? Because I have sort of vague memories of it being Advanced Hero Quest, which was, exactly as you described. And then they kind of relaunched it as Warhammer Quest. And I think it was basically the same. I might be horribly wrong about that. All the Advanced Hero Quest fans are yelling at the podcast now.
I have no real knowledge of Advanced Hero Quest. Like, I've heard the name, but that's about it. But yeah, maybe they just rebranded it through an old Warhammer branding
I think that's what happened. I might be wrong. But that was the one where you had like the Witch Hunter and stuff as the characters.
Yeah, I would imagine they fucked with it a little bit more than just changing the lore a bit, but yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, it got a rules refresh and all that.
I just find it kind of interesting finding out how people got into this stuff in particular. Because it's one of those things where I think most people have a story of some sort behind that. It might be something as simple as, oh, I was leafing through an issue of White Dwarf in News Agents, you know, back when we got our news on, like, dead trees.
So I definitely used to buy White Dwarf from a news agency. Yeah.
Or, you know, I walked past a Games Workshop store and I saw all this stuff and it looked really cool and I'd start to get interested and so on. But yeah, I'm just curious as to how people get into this sort of thing. Because it's not one of the more common hobbies, I guess you'd say. It's not like sort of, TV or films or games or something. There tends to be some sort of catalyst, something that brings you into it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the painting side of it as well. That was good.
With the white undercoat, which you needed about 7 gallons of.
Yeah, but you also learn that you want to do a thin white undercoat, because if you do just slap white paint on, then everyone's features disappear into gelatinous blob of paint. It's an important learning curve. And then you learn about dry brushing and using inks for shading. And you're like, I'm a proper painter now.
Yeah, exactly. And this is how you get children interested in the arts.
Yeah, exactly. Doing little conversions of characters and stuff from your bits box.
Yeah, it's good. That's how you get children interested in art, is you get them to paint Warhammer figures. It's like how you get them interested in English literature by explaining all of the sex jokes in Shakespeare. And how unspeakably filthy some of the stuff in that is.
Or you just give them Macbeth and are like, look how bloodthirsty this is. It's amazing.
I'm mostly thinking of the Country Matters discussion.
Yeah.
you can read
They teach
that.
This to children.
You can read the Country Matters discussion as being a bit of really bland dialogue, or you can realise that the entire thing is innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
Guess which one most schools teach.
I've covered quite a lot of Dawn of War then. Look, I wrote a 3,000-word review on this. I reckon if you want more in-depth thoughts, you should probably read that. Have I convinced you that you might like this game, Tim?
Yeah, it's one of those I've been shopping around to see where I can find it cheap, and I've been going, should I not? I mean, I read your review, but I wanted to kind of hear some words about it from your own mouth.
I wouldn't say, oh my god, this is an essential must-have purchase right now, but you are definitely in the... this would be of interest to you.
As someone who plays MOBAs, likes the other Dawn of War games, and doesn't think that they horribly fucked them up with Dawn of War 2, and also, you know, likes 40k, like MOBAs, RTS. Yeah, I think I'm probably in the demographic. It's still one I'm kind of on the fence about, but...
Sure. It's so weird to me that...
If I don't have much work on this got the...
Sorry. It's weird to me that this got the MOBA. that's quite an intimidating stare you're giving me. Weird that this got the MOBA stigma when Dawn of War 2 exists, and like to me seems a lot more MOBA-y.
Yeah.
And yet, like they made this one much more like an RTS, and everyone went, "Oh, fucking MOBAs." And swore off it. I just don't understand.
Probably because MOBAs weren't quite as big a thing when Dawn of War 2 came out. Whereas now everyone's like, fucking everything's a MOBA. Quake Champions is a MOBA.
I kind of get a bit of the fatigue, but like, look, the RTS and MOBA genres are clearly linked. They're clearly going to be like evolving and cannibalizing from each other and evolving in different yet similar directions.
Genres are hard to pigeonhole at the best of times, as noted earlier in this podcast when you said about Code Vein, it's an action RPG in the soul sense rather than the Diablo sense.
Right, yeah.
Genres are at best very rough guidelines, and there aren't many games, or at least there aren't many worthwhile games that stick strictly to the cookie cutter definitions, unless they do that spectacularly well.
Like, here are some things that are not in Dawn of War 3's multiplayer. There are no creeps. There are no, like...
except for the other players. They're gonna be fucking creeps.
The elite, like, hero-type units do not level up throughout the course of a match. You know, they gather experience points afterwards for some doctrine unlocks and stuff. There are no like item purchases or anything like that. So there's a lot of stuff where it's just like none of this is here. You've just got some big important special RTS units who you can bring into the battlefield, which you've always been able to do in every RTS from all time.
Yeah, I mean
the main thing is that the mode of play and the victory conditions are quite MOBA-y. That's it.
Well,
like, that's
but even that is basically blow up the enemy's HQ, which is the victory condition of practically every RTS ever.
Again, that's the crossover, isn't it? That's
I mean
where you see the heritage. So,
like Dawn of War 2 wasn't overly MOBA-y. It had elements, and I think it went pretty heavy MOBA with Last Stand, which I didn't play, as mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, that's
but
I guess what I'm thinking of.
It was more of a sort of a tactical, real-time tactics game rather than real-time strategy, where you have a limited unit pool with various abilities and positioning and timing and so on. It was all very important. And, you know, they leveled up between missions, and you could assign points to make them shoot faster or unlock new abilities, and you could give them war gear that you'd found and so on. But, you know, it was definitely more real-time tactics than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I don't think any of the Dawn of War games are MOBAs.
No. I would totally play a Warhammer 40,000 MOBA, though.
Yeah, I think even I might give that a go. Just like, out of... I mean, there was a Warhammer Fantasy MOBA that I think barely got out of beta.
I have.
Which I did actually play.
Yeah,
it was an EA one.
I'd totally forgotten about that, and now some memories are resurfacing.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like, okay, yeah, like Space Marines, okay, if you're playing as them, then maybe like Imperial Guard troops are charging down the lanes as creeps, and Tyranids have gene stealers. So yeah, you could totally do this.
Yeah, yeah. Orcs could have like a bunch of Gretchen streaming towards the...
Exactly. It's like, yeah, it can totally do this. We're going to see an announcement about this sometime soon, and it'll be developed by Cyanide.
Dawn of War 4 coming soon.
Shouldn't it at least be Afternoon of War by now?
Yeah. The dawn has been going on an awfully long time. They're really stretching this. Maybe it's one of those planets where it's just perpetual dawn because of the way it rotates or doesn't rotate.
Possibly.
Around there. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Well, okay, so the best way to see if you like Dawn of War 3 is to play the open beta, which is running right now until Monday.
Oh,
yep.
Man. Okay, I should get on that this weekend.
It's,
if I have time.
It's multiplayer only, but that's you don't have to sign up or anything. Just go to the Dawn of War 3 Steam page, and there's a link to like here's the open beta client. Click this.
Is there AI that I can do badly against? There was in the Dawn of War 2 open beta, if I recall.
There was not in the closed beta, I don't think. I only played against real people in that, but the open beta may, of course, be slightly different. So I don't know.
Oh well. Maybe I'll give that a try.
Nobody knew what they were doing in the closed beta, and it was great.
Shit! Everyone's gonna know what they're doing now. Are you gonna go and play the open beta and destroy people?
I still wouldn't, because the people who've like played RTSs before will still completely wreck me. I mean. Played it, I don't know, played them substantially in multiplayer, would still wreck me. So no, probably not. I'm going to hide with my review client and wait for that
Coward.
To turn into the full game. Yeah. Is there anything that you've played that you can talk about, Tim? I know there's something you play that you can't still. We had no guesses for what that game was. I'm disappointed.
I'm also disappointed. Did we
actually reveal what it was? I can't remember.
No, we didn't. Okay. We gave very strong hints, though.
Yeah.
No, I can't talk about Outlast 2 yet. The embargo hasn't lifted.
Fine,
I am hoping to get that finished in time for review, assuming it doesn't trigger either a heart attack or numerous anxiety attacks.
Fair.
If nothing else, there will be a video when embargo lifts. I don't know if I can say when embargo lifts, but it will be. I think the game's out Tuesday.
Yeah.
Okay.
That gives you some clues, people.
It's like Tuesday 6 PM or something. The embargo is prior to when the game launches, so I can say that much.
Yeah.
I think
that seems fair. Well, in that case. Shall we call it a day on this podcast? I did also play Guardians of the Galaxy, but I just read the review.
I don't want to talk about that too much, but I do. Like, this is an opportunity to bring up.
Mm.
I had some interesting discussions with people about Telltale stuff recently.
Okay.
Lots of people going, I fucking love The Walking Dead season 3 or whatever the hell they're on now, and Batman, that was really good, and I'm so looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was like, I'm personally getting really bored with the way they're doing this stuff. I've been getting bored. Actually, no, sorry, I take it back. It wasn't Walking Dead that was mentioned. It was Batman and Game of Thrones were mentioned as being superb and amazing, and I was like,
really?
Wow. Batman was kind of iffy from what I played, and Game of Thrones is the one that most people seem to think was a bit shit.
Yeah, it had its moments, but overall it was...
Yeah, that was like
particularly
potato fucking.
Venomous potato fucking, yeah, exactly.
I'm curious. Maybe it's just the fact that I've played so many of these things by now that I'm finding it very difficult to have any real interest in them anymore.
I mean, I guess I think that's why I quite liked Guardians of the Galaxy, because I've mostly, almost entirely, played their narrative strata, which is grim, dark, horrible things happening, and
yes,
moral decisions that you take that don't matter because someone's going to die anyway. This is one of their Sam and Max games. I think this is the first one I played that's like, no, we're just having a laugh. That's mostly going to be funny. So that's probably partially why I'm like, actually, yeah, this is all right. I'm not sick of this yet. They took the plot in a somewhat interesting direction, and used some good licensed music. Not enough good licensed music, but that's because they don't have as much money as Hollywood, clearly.
But they do have enough money to get the license from Marvel.
Yes, good point. Well, actually, maybe that's what they spent all their money on.
I don't know how those license. Maybe that doesn't cost money so much as they just need to convince Marvel that it's worth it for a share of the profits.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Maybe Marvel has to pay them to help make the game or something. I don't know.
Not really sure. Anyway, one of the main guys writing this was also writing Tales from the Borderlands. So that should obviously tell you that it's pretty funny. It's not always as funny as it needs to be, I would say, but it's not bad.
Tales of the Borderlands kind of had, it was Borderlands humor, which really isn't for everyone. But I'm assuming this is probably a bit different.
And it's not. Yeah, the tone differs a bit from the Guardians of the Galaxy film, partly because they're doing a Telltale game rather than making a film. But it had enough jokes that landed for me, or amusing little incidents and background expressions and stuff that I thought it was okay.
This is another one of those ones where it's like, this could be good.
Yeah.
Maybe if it keeps going like this.
Right. Like, who knows where this plot is going over the next four episodes and whether it'll sustain itself and what have you, but
I don't know whether I like the fact that, you have to buy the entire season at once on PC, assuming you still do, because you have had to for most of them. Whereas I think on console you can buy it.
Let me see.
You can buy these things on an episode-by-episode basis.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, maybe it would be better if it was the episode by episode thing. You could say, yes, episode one is totally worth £7, as opposed to going, yes, the entire season is worth £25 based on one fifth of it.
It looks like you gotta stump up the $25 for the whole season on Steam. It has a very positive overall user review, so there you go.
Oh my god, then, I fucking hate international pricing.
Why? Is it also £25 on Steam?
I haven't actually checked, I was just looking at Dawn of War 3. I can buy Dawn of War 3 for $36.
That's a good price for Dawn of War 3.
Or I can buy it for £36.
That's a less good price for Dawn of War 3.
I actually have a sneaking suspicion that may actually be it's not $36. I think it's actually all the prices are listed in pounds, but they've got the dollar sign there for some reason because this site is shit.
Hmm. Yeah. Anyway. That would be quite a wide discrepancy, having it. $36 or £36.
$36 would also be pretty cheap for that game.
If you can pick up Dawn of War 3 a week ahead of it coming out for $36, I would say go ahead and do that. I'm done on Guardians of the Galaxy pretty much.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening, everybody. You've stuck with us again. I should start handing out medals.
We really should. There should be like participants' badges or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Do some mock-ups. You should get like a Panther Operative badge. Sing through multiple.
Oh, that's it. That's what we need as one of the custom emotes in our Discord channel. We need Panther Operative.
Has to be whatever we decide Panther Operative looks like.
I do you not remember? I drew the box art for Panther Operative.
I am now remembering. Yes. Right. We'll base it on that then.
It was a panther with Sam Fisher's goggles.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, we definitely want. We should make that. How easy is it to make that happen on the Discord channel?
Really, quite easy.
Excellent.
It's the only difficulty is that like the panther is black and Discord's default background color is a dark gray. Right. So
The other difficulty is this was a one-off joke on a very old podcast that people may not really remember.
But people will like either pretend to get it so that they can be cool and in. Or they will actually go and check out. They'll try and find out what this is about. Listen to the old podcast. Actually, that could be bad. They'll hear the quality.
I have no idea what episode that was. Around about when Splinter Cell Blacklist was out, and also that Game Maker sort of pseudo-strategy game was out as well.
Splinter Cell Blacklist? I don't remember it being called that.
Well, I know you don't, but the rest of the world does. So, Panther Operative Blacklist. Anyway, yes.
Right.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
And silent under the dawn of that last great day.